And Professor Tom gives his apologies. He was hoping to be here, but he had a prior commitment. So I hope there will be an opportunity for you to engage with him at the next opportunity. I'm going to hand over to Professor Sodine, who will introduce the members of our team representing the HSRC this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dutcher. And thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, honourable members. Our appreciation for this opportunity to be able to talk to our annual performance plan. Chairperson, I'm accompanied by our Deputy CEO, Professor Leitner Simbai, sitting on the far end there. On my immediate right is our Group Shared Services Exec, Ms. Crystal Abdul. And next to her in the middle there is our Director for Finance, Ms. Richard Mohambo. And we're being supported by Mr. Noor Fakir behind us.
I forgot to introduce ourselves to know which change. If we could just do that quickly. My name is Lindwe Masera, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee.
My name is Noguzo Landongeni, the member of the committee.
Good afternoon, Dr. Susan Tembekwaya, member of this committee. Thank you.
Afternoon, Chantal King, member of the committee.
Afternoon, Annelie Lothreit, member of the committee.
There's three members who are walking in. As you walk in, you can introduce yourself. Come in, Tuck.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Tandi Mpulo. I'm also the member of the committee.
And the other member who was pushing her, helping her with the wheelchair, is Honorable Agnes Tuck. She's just getting her breath. There she comes. Agnes Tuck. Thank you very much, and sorry to interrupt you. I must also indicate that a lot of committees are meeting, you know, with this budget processes. So other members have gone to other committees, but it's okay. Yeah, as we have indicated and noticed, including the support staff, all women, yeah, except the liaison office of the minister. Yeah. Over to you.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm very glad to say that person looking after our finances is a woman. And an extremely formidable woman at that. So thank you very much, Chairperson. What we're going to do is quickly run you through the following. So we'll talk about our organisational structure, and I'll do that very, very quickly. Move on to a description of what the situational analysis of the organisation is. I'll also talk to a midterm performance review, and this is something that you would not have had before, colleagues. And I'll talk to you about why we've put that in there. And then I'm going to hand over to Ms. Abdul to give us an account of our financials and what our objectives are in terms of those financials. And then Professor Simbai, who was in charge of our research in the organisation, will essentially talk to our research objectives, and Ms. Abdul will close quickly with an account of what our risks and our challenges are. Okay? So I hope that you all have the summary in front of you, colleagues. This first slide is a slide of what we look like as an organisation. And it's a slide that tries to capture this essential division of the HSRC into its research function and its administrative support function. The research function is on the left, and the support is on the right. Now, this gives you no sense of the balance inside of the organization, but I think it's important for you to know that we have tried really hard to make the left side the heavier of the two, so that we're able to devolve more resources and attention to the essential mandate which the organization has there. I'm not going to spend any time here except to say that cubes on the left-hand side are all of our, we call them programs. They're like departments in a university, okay, in a university faculty. And they essentially have a disciplinary focus. So you'll see there's economics, there's education, there's health. Some of the others don't give themselves so easily away, but they're really sociology and psychology and so on. On the right, we indicate all the important and essential functions which an organization such as this must have. I now move on, Chairperson, to our situational analysis. Now, if you have the actual APP with you, in this APP, we set out what the organization essentially is in relation to the bigger context in which it finds itself. So how this organization is related to other organizations in the innovation landscape, like the universities and other science councils and so on. Our strategic mission is described in this situation analysis. And this situation analysis takes its core substance from our statute. And that statute says that the HSRC should be a promoter of the human sciences and a performer of the human sciences. Now, it's in this tension that a lot of discussion always takes place about what the HSRC is all about. We are going to be doing this year, Chairperson, our five-yearly institutional review, and our five-year institutional review will often come to concentrate on how we are doing these two things. How are you operating as a performer, and how are you operating as a promoter? As a performer, we have the function and the obligation of essentially providing a leadership role for the role of the social sciences and the humanities in the country. We have this responsibility to convene people, to convene research, to convene ideas, to put them in the form of public dialogues, to put out information into the public domain about the best ideas that are emerging in the human and social sciences. Minister Pandor, when she was still with us, was very keen that we pay more attention to this than simply performing. In that performing task, and that's where a lot of this overlap happens. We do a lot of work in the performing category, which is not very different to what happens in the universities. The difference, of course, is that our work is problem-orientated. Our work is aimed at addressing the big issues of South African, Southern African, African context. And we are required to, in terms of that research, be producing research which is going to be of assistance in helping to answer some of the big social questions of the country. And that's the difference between us and a university. So, of course, people in university might be doing work like this, but all of our work is aimed at social questions that are of serious consequence for making our country and our society a better one than it is. So in terms of this, Chairperson, we have to develop strategic plans. And we come to the end of our strategic plan in 2019. We will, in the course of 2019, develop a new strategic plan. But our, you know, in terms of our current strategic plan, we have decided to make poverty and inequality the focus of our work. We think that these two questions, along with unemployment, are the major questions that are confronting South African society today, and it's a situation where the HSRC almost has no choice but to focus its attention on these questions. And so the approach that we take to this is to argue that in relation to poverty and inequality, that the questions of social development, economic inclusion, governance and decision making are the key broad factors which must inform the way in which we try to concentrate our approach in this area of poverty and inequality. And it's in these three areas that the principles, that the theoretical frameworks which inform the work of the HSRC can be derived. Inclusive economic growth is a major, if you like, framing approach and principle that we would use in terms of thinking about the key areas of social development, economic inclusion and governance, and decision making. And this has led to, and this is the last slide in this section of situational analysis, to us developing through a consultative process inside of the HSRC of what we call three flagship priorities, three flagship projects in the HSRC. Now, we have many projects in the HSRC. The HSRC has easily, at any one moment in time, hundreds of projects that are on the go and that people are working with. These three projects are projects that are intended to draw together in a transversal way people inside of the organization, to give people inside of the organization to work together in a cross-disciplinary, transdisciplinary way around the problem. And so they would be bringing to these issues economic perspectives, and of course the economic perspective is almost paramount, is almost central. But also perspectives from way, you know, into the past, from history, all the way to, if you like, psychology and sociology and political studies. The first of these priorities is an area of work which we call well-being. And what we're trying to understand here and put together, and I think we have introduced this to you before, but I'll say something about it. What we're trying to do here is to understand how South African individuals and communities are managing on an everyday basis. And how is it that households, individuals are not only surviving but also dealing with the challenges with which they're confronted with? And how in that process are they understanding what is good enough for them? So that expression, what is good enough for them, is absolutely crucial, because we think it is this that we don't understand well enough inside of the country. What is it that makes people want to make their lives better? I mean, what understandings do they have of now the circumstances in which they find themselves? So, of course, there are global indicators around what well-being might mean and they include things like happiness. They also include things like material possessions. Do you have a fridge in your house? You know, do you have access to running water, sanitation, and so on? So we'll be looking at that and how people are thinking about all of those things, but also trying to understand what makes people tick, what makes them act in their own interests, you know, what makes them want more and better for their children. So this is a really important first initiative that we are on about. It's also an opportunity for us to look back, to understand households and intergenerational relationships, to understand the relationships between grandparents and grandchildren, and how these ideas of well-being are being transmitted between the generations. The second project is a project on city regions, and this comes out of an understanding of the global literature that most development in the world at the moment is taking place in city regions. Most of the social mobility that is taking place is taking place in these large metropolises. And so we are really interested in places like Gauteng, Johannesburg in the main, but also Cape Town, Itikweni, and Port Elizabeth. And we have the good fortune of being able to work very closely with the municipality in Itikweni. We also have a very good relationship with the Gauteng City Observatory. And the idea here is to understand how migration into the city is being managed by people, what people are needing in terms by way of infrastructure, how the local economy, in particularly townships, is evolving, and what new innovations are emerging out of these conurbations which we need to tell the country about. So this is a very interesting and exciting area of work. It, of course, it unavoidably raises issues of land, issues of relationship with the rural areas and so on. And we have colleagues working in that transition between the rural areas and the urban areas. And they've come to some of the other select committees and spoken about those kinds of questions. The last area is the area of transformative governance. I describe this as the area of norm making. It's the normative area. It's the area of South African values. And the questions that we are asking here is, what values do we need to be cultivating inside of South Africa which will provide us with a reasonable consensus about what it is that we might expect of each other? What is reasonable in terms of what we might expect of each other? This area has a lot to do with institutions, with the law primarily, but with institutions, including parliament and government. So what we're hoping to do here is to understand what the minimum standards are that institutions ought to be putting in place, which we can use to hold each other to account around. What minimum standards do we be should we be putting in place which will stop and help us move away from these excessive forms of expression that we see in protests and so on, where people can get into spaces of dialogue and hold each other to account in reasonable kinds of ways? So those are the foci, Chairperson, and that brings me to the end of that particular section of our APP. I now move, Chairperson, to the midterm performance review, and this is something new. We put this in our APP because our department, DST, asked us to put it in. They wanted to see how, in relation to our 5-year commitments in terms of our strategic plan, how well in that period of the 5 years we were doing, and particularly bearing in mind that we're coming to the end of this particular period and we'll be beginning a new strategic plan. And so they thought that it would be useful with this AVP to do a little bit of assessment of the previous period. And so what I'm going to do very quickly, Chairperson, is highlight for you our performance in these last 3 years. These slides are about the commitments that we make in terms of our key performance targets. The first slide is a very conventional bar graph indication of our performance in relation to publications. It's the first thing that everybody asks of us. It's what is expected also of universities. So the grant that we get is for us to produce knowledge, and the most conventional way to be looking at knowledge performance is through these publications. These three periods, they are for 2014-2015, and this is for all of these slides that are to come. The period 2015-2016 and the period 2016-2017. You can see that in the last year we have gone down slightly in the last financial year compared to where we had been 2015 in terms of our total output, but not by much, by six publications. So with six publications down on where we had been in the previous year. But our most senior researchers have performed better than they did before. It's that orangey kind of bar. On the right in I must be colorblind. Okay, thank you. Sorry, my human beings are very complicated. Sorry? So our senior professors are doing better. Our senior researchers, not too badly. The next slide the next part of that graph there is in terms of the seminars that we hosted. And I think we've done really well. We committed ourselves to offering 50 seminars both in 2015 and 2016. And in 2015-2016 we did 62. In this last year we lay on 60. Now I'd just like to pause here for a little bit of PR, Chairperson. We had a seminar yesterday on public housing, and it was a seminar about the difficulties which South Africans who are in that income gap between earning 3,000 to 15,000 rands per month. And we were reporting in this seminar about the difficulties that people like that experience in being able to afford mortgages. And it was a really wonderful occasion. There were people from Treasury, there were people there from Stats SA, and there were people from housing, and there were activists, and some of the banks were there. And so it was a really, and that's exactly what these seminars are intended to be and to provide, and that we're able to have put on 60, I think is a really impressive performance. And I really would like to hope that we can also make that opportunity for members of Parliament to be able to join us if and when when they can. The next slide is a not as happy a story. It's a slide about ability to be able to bring in colleagues from Africa into the HSRC. You'll see there have over the last 3 years not ever met this target. And the issues here are the difficulties in being able to bring in colleagues to come to join us at the HSRC for periods of time that are manageable for them and that are also for the good of our own organization. And we struggle. We have, I think, real difficulty in being able to put together the synergy here of ourselves and the rest of the rest of the continent. And part of the issue, and I think we have drawn this to the attention of Parliament, as has to do with our challenges with Home Affairs and getting Home Affairs to facilitate the visas and the work permit requirements that are needed here. Sorry, did you want to say something, Ms. Simon?
Just to add to that it's also a major concern of universities. It's a major concern also of universities because it's a constant challenge to get those visas, the work permits in time, and that as a result of the delays, we are really losing out.
The next slide, Chairperson, is about our capacity building here. And the first upper left segment of the slide is about research trainees. And you can see there that we've exceeded our targets every year. Professor Mbai may talk to our targets around all of this a little later on, but we're in this interesting situation at the moment where we are heavy on the ground with junior researchers and are struggling to build up a cadre of senior researchers, and we want to get that balance a whole lot better. The next slide is about our data sets. You know that we do a lot of big surveys, and we are in the social sciences probably the biggest agency able to do this very specialist kind of work. The challenge is, you do this big work, but then you have to put the information and the data together in forms which are accessible to the public. And it's not easy, that. It's not. So we can give people raw data, but to give people data, even to you in Parliament, in forms that you might use, takes time. And it takes resources. So we have an obligation here in terms of our dissemination commitments to make this informed information available to the public. Fortunately, we've been able to meet our targets over the last 3 years, and so we're not doing badly, too badly in terms of that. The next slide is about our institutional transformation. And here also we struggle. We have, I know, come to you repeatedly and said to you repeatedly that we're trying our best, but we continue to struggle. We continue to struggle to be able to build, hold on, and to develop senior researchers who are African. And of course, we could lower those targets, but we do want to be in a situation where we make ourselves and remind ourselves repeatedly of the importance of this task. We can talk about why we are struggling so much here, Chairperson, and it's a discussion all by
by itself. But the fact of the matter is that it looks like it should be getting better, but it almost isn't. And that's a great matter of concern. And likewise, in terms of researchers who are female, the profiles there, and so our objective is to try and get to a point where at least 50% of our senior researchers are female, but we consistently fall short. And so those are really important issues, Chairperson, that I'm sure could become the subject of discussion. I'd like to now hand over to Ms. Abdul.
Professor Dean. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Afternoon, Honourable Members. The first slide, you can move on, Claire, talks to the income sources from 2005. So you can see that we've enjoyed, the curve is fairly consistent as from 2014. Our external income target, which is the blue line, just under the green one, that really comes in at about 38%. So this talks to all the research income that our researchers are forced to generate in order to support the mandate of the organization. Our parliamentary grant income comes in at about 53% of our total income. That's the green line on the graph. And then we have 9% contributed by other income, rental income, interest income. So in total, our external income, the other income sources, comprises about 47-48% year on year, and that has been consistent since about 2014. Change, please. In the next slide, we're looking at our performance over the past 9 months. Here, what's important to probably mention is that year on year, we utilize the full parliamentary grant that we receive to achieve our mandate. In fact, we supplement that with external income. Our external income target, you can see there, is at 96% as at the end of December. As at the end of December, we expect to achieve about 75% of our budget. And our team, the tireless working and commitment has really brought in exceptional external income, and we've come in at 96% as at the end of December. Our actual expenditure versus budgeted costs is at 82%, slightly over. Other income target at 70%. A lot of these would relate to timing differences in terms of when the expenditure is incurred. We do expect to achieve budget on all fronts by the end of the year. In our next slide, we're looking at the 2018-19 budget. Our income comprises, again, the parliamentary grant at 53% of our total income. So 303.7 million then of the 570 million. What's important to note is that the 303 million includes VAT. So in the past year, we had VAT reflected at 37.3 million of the 303 million, with the increase from 14% to 15%. We've lost an additional 2.3 million rand. In an attempt then to address the cut in or the reduction in our subsidy from in the parliamentary grant, which came to about 22 million then for the 2018-19 year, as well as the increase in VAT, which reduced the income available to operations. We have put a lot of pressure on our research programs, and their external income target increased from 189 million in 2018 to 217 million rand, so about 28 million rand. So that has been absorbed into the organization. Our salaries are consistent at about 293. It increased from 278 to 293 million in the new year, consistently at 52% of our total budget. Our admin expenses at 160 million rand includes rental expenditure, overheads, the typical running costs that you'd find in any organization. And that's at 28% of our total expenditure. The next line talks to project-related expenses of 160 million rand. This looks at all the expenses we incur to run a project. And that, again, consistent at 20% per annum. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. I'm going to talk about our strategic-oriented goals. And basically, as this slide shows, we use the acronym ADEPT to describe the six outcome-oriented goals which we have set for ourselves. And really, these show the alignment to our mandated objectives according to the Act, as well as being in line with the National Development Plan priorities. So what we call A is advancing knowledge and scientific excellence, which is expected of a research council. D is developing collaborative networks and applied research on poverty and inequality. We just talked about being a promoter of research earlier. E is enhancing research skills and public awareness. The big part of that is capacity building that we do, which I'll talk about in a moment. And then P stands for preserving and sharing data for further analysis, which again is obliged, something that we are obliged to do according to the Act. T stands for institutional transformation. And lastly, S, financial sustainability. In terms of the goals that we have set for ourselves, or the targets, which are shown in the next page, I will start with the A, which are shown on that slide. Basically, we set the last but one column is for the previous financial year, and honorable members, I would like you to actually compare with the one that we are proposing. We have made some adjustments to some of them, but not all of them. Is that the right slide? Okay, sorry, might have moved a little bit. Just go back. Yeah, sorry. Let me start with this slide first. So one of the requirements, as our CEO indicated earlier, is the need to disseminate the findings from the research that we undertake. And we do that through publishing of peer-reviewed articles. In the past, we used only to count publications by senior researchers. But starting from the last financial year, we're looking at everybody, both junior and senior researchers. Last year's target was 0.8. We have moved that up to 0.9. And we really are moving to where at least each person publishes an article, hopefully by the next financial year. In terms of scholarly books, we've kept the target at 14. Similarly, for scholarly book chapters, we've kept that at 54. We have reduced slightly the number of research seminars from 50 to 40 in the previous year. And the main reason is working together with GST, we would like to emphasize more quality than quantity. And actually this will be an explanation how we use in some of those indicators listed below, because we have actually reduced them from the number we were producing in the past. Well, and the idea is really part of the process is that working together with DST and perhaps some of the line departments, we can make these seminars more meaningful, particularly from a policy perspective. So it's no longer just an issue of holding as many seminars as we want to. We publish a quarterly publication called the HSR Review that we'll continue to produce, that tries to present in a user-friendly way what we do. So it's a way of sharing some of the findings with many stakeholders. I think we sent this now electronically maybe to 3,000 plus people who are interested in the kind of work that we do. And then policy briefs, this we have reduced from 15 to 10. And again, it's been partly as a result of interacting with the Department of Science and Technology to say, again, it's not about quantity, but rather about quality. We've gone further to identify each year, starting from last year, and something which we just done second year in a row, to identify four policy briefs which we hope together with the minister will be able to follow up with line departments and engage in some dialogues around. So again here, the idea is we need to produce something that is useful. We have produced probably by now up to thousands of these policy briefs. But the question has been, what is the impact of that? And hence part of the motivation of reducing the number in such a way that hopefully if we can have a few good quality ones which we actually can even develop jointly with some line departments in government, then it is information that they'll be able to use to inform policy development. We also started an initiative called Public Dialogue, which is the idea of bringing up issues that affect South Africans in their everyday lives. For example, a popular dialogue series had to do with the issue of racism. But we talk about different issues, and we have said four of these throughout the year. And the idea is actually to be able to do this, perhaps even go down in communities where some of the information might actually be helpful. One issue we are required to also take care of is collaborating with researchers from other African countries. And there we have a target of at least 8 articles should be published. Sorry, that's the wrong one. Okay, let me correct myself. I apologize for that, Chair. So the number of peer-reviewed journal articles here, we are looking at impact of those articles which we talked about at the beginning. A standard measure of the impact in academic circles is how many other researchers cite that work. So we started monitoring this only last year. The number does look very low, and it's very low. The reason is it was set before we had even seen what we were able to achieve last year. But that we'll present to you later. So I think that target can actually be increased dramatically. Because actually there are a lot of journal articles which are cited at least 10 times which have been published within the previous 5 years. This has to do with impact of the publications. Next slide. We have deliberately decided to identify all historically disadvantaged institutions in the country and highlight collaborations that we do with them. We set ourselves a target of working with at least 5 of them. I think there are nearly 10. And that's the target which we have set. The CEO did talk about the issue of African research fellows. Again, that has come down given the history that we've been struggling to meet that particular indicator. But we have somehow come up with a slightly creative idea. Apart from appointing people who come from outside the borders of the country and have them stay for 3 to 5 years, we have modified now. There are 2 possible ways of meeting that indicator. We could either do that or actually award short-term visits, where people will be coming and going back to their countries and doing a bit of work. We are just trying to implement that now. I hope we'll be able to reach that target that way, that at least maybe half could be fairly long-term, 3 to 5 years or 2 to 5 years, and the rest could be those short-term who come and go over a year. The one I had jumped to is the last one, peer-reviewed journal articles co-published with researchers from outside South Africa, but on the African continent. Again, this is part of fulfilling our mandate, which is that we should work with our partners, fellow researchers in other countries on the African continent. And we set a target of 8. Again, I think we should be able to improve on that, at least for next financial year, now that we know we're actually doing quite well. The next one talks about capacity development. We're fairly successful at this. What has been our major limitation is the availability of funding. We would like to grow the number of masters and doctorate and even postdoctoral fellows who come to gain research experience by actually doing research with us. But unfortunately, due to budgetary constraints, this is supported by DST also directly, but we're only able to engage so many. So we set a target of 35 at master's level, at 45 for those at PhD, and 20 those who have recently acquired a PhD within the past 5 years. And basically, our interns are people who really work, because 60% of the time they're supposed to spend on projects. And then they are given that 40% to focus on their studies. And hence, the next 2 indicators are completed master's level research internship. We link that to when they graduate from a university. Clearly something at times which is beyond our control, because we don't register the students ourselves. They are normally studying at another university. Sometimes some of our senior researchers do help supervise as much as we are able to, but we try to facilitate the process so that they can finish as quickly as possible. So we set a target of 6 master's level research trainees completing their degrees, but not only the internship, and 8 for PhD. Last year we started a new idea. Again, this has to do with promotion of research. We started what we call training academies. Or winter school, and this focus on research methodologies. The one in the previous year, perhaps I shouldn't be talking too much about that because you hear that. We did that at the University of Zululand. And that typifies what we are trying to achieve to promote research. But we had a target of one last year. We have increased that to two for the current financial year. Then we talked about the issue of our data set. That number has gone down also. I think it has been something like 23 for the past few years. We've reduced it to only 10. And the main reason is that when we have reviewed the number of downloads, which is the next indicator there, we have found that people normally only are mainly downloading on three data sets, which are repeated surveys. Right. So there's really no need to be archiving 23 data sets when people are using maybe 3 to 5 in the main. And hence we came down on that one. And we include those 3 to 5 which are popular, so to say, but also add a few more. The fact is that we have lots of data sets which we have accumulated, which we have curated, and these are accessible particularly to researchers elsewhere, could be within the country or outside, and particularly students, postgraduate students. The advantage is that they wouldn't have to collect data at all. They just access the data sets, do their analysis, and write their thesis or dissertation. And basically, that's the idea. For researchers, of course, they use it for whatever other purpose. Should be possible also for government to access those if, for example, they are interested in specific issues which might have policy implications. In terms of number of downloads, we have set that number at 472, which I said are mostly from three data sets. Moving on, the CEO did talk about how hard we try to meet these two key indicators. Just because we show the first one as African, it doesn't mean we ignore the other race groups. Right? But we are just saying proportionately, at least slightly more than half should be African. We know there are other people. That's why there is a balance of 44%, which is meant to cover the other risk groups. But we use that just as an indication of how well we are doing. The same applies to females. We have set that at 50%. That's the ideal that we would like to reach one day. We'll keep trying. Thank you. And then a final issue is one to do with sustainability. My colleague Christo did talk about the fact that we do receive an annual grant from Parliament through DST, but that's only about 52% of what we spend. So we set this target of 48% as a target which researchers try to raise from among others tenders. For example, government departments do put out tenders, but otherwise we also look out for funding from foundations and indeed from international organizations as well as countries that have bilateral relations with South Africa. So the target there is 48%, and lastly, because we do not want to give too much stress to our fundraisers, those who are really good at that, instead of them raising the money every year, the ideal is that they raise money for 3 to 5 years, so that way they can take a rest in between, and then they continue with the fundraising. So that indicator multi-year grants is grants which last for at least 3 years. and we set a target at 56%, the better we are able to do that, I think the happier our senior researchers are. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Prof. Our risks are really at a high level. We have four of them. The first one deals with the sustainability of the Human Sciences Research Council. So with reducing DST parliamentary grant income, as well as the increasing competition out there in for research income, sustainability of the HSRC remains a key risk for the organization. My colleagues have alluded to the attraction and retention of critical skills, so this now cuts across research as well as our corporate areas. Non-compliance with occupational health and safety regulations. Our building in Pretoria is an aging building and requires substantial funding to maintain it and to keep it compliant with regulation. So again, this is an ongoing struggle with the limited funding we have. Cybersecurity threat, which is not unique to the HSRC, is something that is foremost on our agenda, particularly with the kind of legacy systems that we have. So a lot of the limited resources we have has been allocated to upgrading firewalls and protecting the organization from external and internal threat. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Chairperson, that brings us to the end, and all it leaves is for us to say a big thank you to you for hosting us here today, and I'd like to thank my colleagues, Ms. Butcher, for supporting us. Very happy to take any questions that you might have, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And congratulations for being retained in the board. And in absentia, we also congratulate the new chairperson of the board at the committee. Can I open for members for comments and questions? Honorable Tak, Honorable Dr. Lossett, Honorable Dr. Sembewa, Honorable Ndongeni.
Yes, Chairperson. My question is on page 9 at the 2018-2019 budget. It sounds to me there that 52% goes to salary and project-related expenses, 20%, administration, 28%. So what I'm reading there salaries is too much, and there's not as much projects then to be handled. That is what the difference in total percentage tells me. I think I'm very stupid with money and with the budget, and I think I need an explanation. Thank you.
Honorable Tak, Dr. Lodge.
Thank you, Chairperson. First, just two comments, and it's something that has struck me during the course of the morning with the different presentations we have, and I'm starting to get a bit concerned. We've heard that there is a problem of attracting young black PhDs, but at the same time, there's a problem of retaining them, and universities are complaining that they don't have academics, young black academics. So somewhere these people are disappearing to, and I'm not quite sure where to, because, oh yes, and Naki said that they're going to do research into why there isn't a high absorption of black PhDs into the private sector. So that to me is just a concern I'm picking up right now. Then also what we've heard from previous entities is the whole question of communication and making work or promoting the entity as such. And that seems to me also a thread going through the different presentations we have, is that people out there don't really know. Even though you have your review that is really very user-friendly, but people don't know about it, and I don't know what we should be doing. So these are just comments from my side. But then I have a question. The department yesterday referred to the whole issue of open research, and that more and more research data has been available for free on different platforms. Are you thinking about that? Are you considering that, and how are you going to counter that, especially in the light of the fact that you really have a sustainability challenge, which I must say the department and the minister also recognized yesterday. So if you could just reply to that, please.
Honorable Ndongeni. Oh, sorry, who was that? Okay. Dr. Timberwine.
Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. Two of my questions have been exhausted. The first one about the salaries, to say that 293 million go into the salaries. It's a big problem. Who earns what and why? And we need an explanation. It can rather go to the projects, because the projects are the most important thing here. And then the second one, as it has been said, we had presentations earlier from different entities. All of them are talking about transformative governance. And you also deals with transformative governance, but you tell us about big issues. My question is, how different is your projects of transformative governance as compared to other entities? And like I said, is it not high time that the different entities come together as one, because we are all serving the country of South Africa, whether we contribute nationally or internationally too, but it's based on serving one and the same country. So it would be better when we talk about the PhDs and the masters, we all pull them in a pool, and we work towards the better service delivery for our graduates in South Africa. So whether issues are big or bigger or small or the smallest, but they all center around one and the same theme. The same applies to the social development, economic inclusion, as part and parcel of the poverty and inequality. It's all some of the themes or terminology that we have been hearing about all over and over and over again from the entities within DST. So my question is definitely something must just be done with the working togetherness of different entities. Mention has been made about retaining the black researchers within the HSRC. What makes it difficult? Why is it difficult for your department to retain them while you have 293 million rand that you use for the salaries? And secondly, why is it a problem for the female researchers to be left at 50%? Why can't they be retained? For me, it's the big issue. And then the first presenter said it should be getting better. We don't want it should be getting better. We want it's better when we are there. When it comes to, I mean, it's gender balance. Let's balance the gender in all aspects, very important. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks, Chair. I'm covered on slide 17 by Honorable Tak. On slide 16, you have a performance overview, narration, target achieved 31st December. You said unaudited. It's not supposed to be audited. Or just, if it's not supposed to be audited, okay, fine. If it's supposed to be audited, why not? And then, on slide 25, how many African female researchers on this 50%? And then on slide 26, I'm not quite sure whether it's me or I don't know whether I captured correctly. You spend 48% from grant, from government grant or allocation. And then on your statement here, on your budget statement, you said the project is going to be 20%. So I don't know whether it's me or, if I'm wrong, can you please correct me? I'm not quite sure whether where is 52% goes. It goes to administration or it goes to where? I don't know. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, Honorable King.
I consider what everyone said about the funding and everything, but the problem is how are you going to retain the existing staff that you have given your financial constraints that you have? And then the last question I have, will you then look at the funding model in order for you to be more sustainable at another way of allocating your resources and your funds? Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I think there was mention of the aging infrastructure on the Pretoria office. Just want to know what progress has been made to deal with that. And I think I agree also with what Honourable Members have said on slide 13. And also linking it with what Dr. Lotris has said, that people do not know. Probably doing a good work, but people don't know about it. I think it goes back to what Honorable Matale once said, that whether, don't you think you need to remodel reposition yourself so that it doesn't have an old connotation or perception, and reposition yourself better. And lastly, I just want to find out how have you dealt with governance issues that were raised by the AG. But before I give it back to you, I want Honorable Mfuno.
Thank you, Chair. My question is only around slide number 9 about the...
Right.
Slide number 9 about the seminar, and my question is, what impact that does make, the tangible? Because most of the time you find that there are seminars, there are workshops, but at the end of the day, there is nothing tangible coming out of it. So I just want to understand that. And then we are talking about 60, I don't know what the percent when you say. It's about 6 points down. I just want to understand why. Why does that happen? And under slide number 13, institutional transformation, where you say you struggle to get more female researchers. I want to know what is the plan, because you can see that this is a challenge. What is the plan? Do you have one? And if you don't, why not? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. I'll give it to Ms. Bacha, then you tell us.
I will ask the colleagues to deal with the majority of these issues, but I'd just like to respond on a more general level on two issues. One,
I hear your real concerns about the percentage of the budget going on salaries, but our researchers are the actual people. That's our human capital. They do the actual work. Unlike the CSIR who come to you with a huge equipment budget, laboratories, etc., our capital is in the people that we employ. So I just wanted to make that comment. I think you all articulating really serious concerns about the composition of the research labor force. And I think, without making excuses, the root of the problem is the pipeline. And until such time as we get enough young girls and women and black people more generally coming into our universities and staying on for postgraduate work, we've changed the composition of our undergraduate cohorts in higher education. The average student in our universities is an African woman. But because of financial constraints, it's getting people to continue into the honors, masters, and PhD, and to do so in a full-time way. Economic circumstances force people to go off and work and maybe come back part-time. So the average age at which people qualify in our country with a PhD is very high. It's about 45 years of age, which is really bad compared to that average age in other countries. And I think the NRF in particular is making effort to identify talented people at a senior undergraduate level and to make sure that there is a progression pipeline. So encouraging them to stay on to do their postgraduate studies on a full-time basis. But the resources are simply not there. In some work I'm doing now, I've discovered that the NRF is only able to fund about 10% of the postgraduates, the doctorates in our system. So we've got those blockages. And then if we come to the situation in the research councils, we're competing. We're all competing for the same talent. And if you go as a PhD or postdoc and then a senior researcher in the universities, you don't have to chase your money in the same way as you have to do in the HSRC. Because we have to make up the shortfall, that's a huge pressure. And we often lose people who will go into the universities because they don't have the same sort of pressures. And then I want to also respond to the whole issue of coordination across the science system. I agree with the Honourable Member completely that is a huge challenge. Again, if you'll excuse me, I'll go back to some work I'm doing at the moment. I cannot find numbers of the total number of PhDs and postdocs that are supported by our government. The figures, I can't find it. I can find what the NRF puts in. I've been going to the annual reports of other science councils and trying to build up a profile. But until such time as we get that intergovernmental coordination right, we've got this. I think a really challenge of lack of coordination, which makes that planning very difficult. So, I agree that's a major challenge. But I'm going to hand over to colleagues.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thatcher. So just to complete the discussion which Ms. Thatcher has raised about these transformational challenges that we have, and I just want to make one point only to add to what Ms. Thatcher said. And that is, it would be really useful to help everybody understand how processes of bringing new people into an organization work. So when this discussion happens about why transformation is so slow and so on, you have a lot of, I think, very, and I'll be quite blunt, facile explanations. The explanations don't come to understand what actually is going on. So there's a lot of finger pointing. The difficulty here is, and it's really important to understand this, that the numbers of young people who are progressing on from honors to masters to PhDs in the various disciplines are fractional. So, and I mentioned this to our minister last week. You take even a field like history. You'd think it's a fairly easy field in which to find African scholars whom you could begin to promote. There would be fewer than 10, maybe a little more people who would be classified as African who are registered for PhDs in the whole system in the country, in the whole system. Now when you are running a search process inside an institution, you will be confronted and maybe two of those people may apply. And so here's your challenge. Do you take those two automatically? Right? You're in a real puzzle every single time. Do you take them automatically or not? Right? So we have real issues here in which we are needing to build the number of people who are in those communities of science. So never mind gastroenterology, to take another example. You know, so we have real structural difficulties here, and we have to be looking right from the schooling system all the way up to be able to get a sense of how we might turn this around. And we need a plan. And that plan can't be a plan that comes from the HSRC. It has to be a national plan, which enjoys the participation, the support of Department of Higher Education Training, Department of Basic Education, Social Development. It's going to require even transport. We brought a report here to transport to show the difficulties that people are having in going to school and how the bus learner transport system is not succeeding. We need Department of Health. The issues around stunting in the country, and we have a little bit of that information, are absolutely pertinent here. So I say this, colleagues, and this is not to minimize the urgency of the issues here. It's only to say that the level of the public discussion needs to be improved around what is going on here so that we can engage these questions with the backing and the making of a platform that will give us some reasonable prospects of being able to say 5 years from now we're in a better situation. Frankly, as uncoordinated as all of us is at the moment, we are going to struggle to turn this around given what is going on. So that's in relation to that. Honourable Temukai raised the question of many people coming here and talking about inclusion and so on and saying why aren't they collaborating. There's a fair amount of collaboration going on in the country at the moment. We have just concluded right now with the universities, with National Treasury, with people from the Presidency, many civil society representatives, from people in the corporate world, an initiative called the Nelson Mandela Initiative in which we are a partner around all of these questions, and it's an attempt to bring together the whole community to think about how we might be solving this these problems. So there's a lot of attempt to try to pull people together, and it is a process which is underway. I'd like to ask Crystal and Richard if they may just want to answer some of the financial questions, and then we'll come back to some of these issues around promotion and communication.
Thanks, Prof. I think what's important to understand from an HR perspective is something like globalization. We have young people who now have access to the world, so they leave and they explore. Commerce now employs social scientists. You went to consult, you go into a consulting firm, you'll find social scientists. It's not restricted to universities and councils. So there's a small pool of people, and we're all competing for this very small pool. In terms of the financial questions we've had, our interns are paid at the top end when compared to our competitors. You know, and it's something we're looking at within the organization. So our salary bill of 52%, that comprises 52%, I think, yes, our staff, our people are our machines. So, you know, that's how we generate our income. When looking at the project-related costs at 20%, that talks to very specific costs, accommodation, airfare, etc., etc. But the 52% comprises your senior researchers, your research directors, your chief research specialists. You know, all of that is included in your 52%. So the 52% doesn't talk to admin salaries per se. It's really looking at salaries in total, because we require to report on salaries as a whole. The unaudited financial statements, Richard, keep me honest here. As at the end of December, our accounts haven't yet been audited. Our financial statements are only audited as at the end of March. So all we're indicating to you is that the accounts have not yet been audited. We've just started an audit process, or finished the first 10 months of our audit. In terms of a funding model, I think what is unique to the HSRC is that we have hybrid funding. So here we have funding from the ST as well as almost 50% coming from external sources to really achieve a mandate set by government. So what we are looking at in the new year is a business model which will incorporate a funding model as well. So we are reviewing the business model of the HSRC, looking at structure, process, etc., in addition to the funding model. So that is on the horizon. In terms of our aging infrastructure in Pretoria, there are a number of initiatives and investigations and studies that we are doing, including looking at alternative accommodation, selling the building, but these have not yet been finalized. Richard, what else? Issues raised by the AG include SEM matters. These SEM matters have been dealt with largely. We've had an engagement with National Treasury looking at how best we deal with funders who prescribe which partners we use. So we would have an international funder saying, please work with the University of the Western Cape. So now, in terms of our SEM processes, we are required to go out and tender if the value exceeds 500,000, but our funding is linked to a particular partner. We've been engaged with National Treasury, and there has been agreement that where our contracts are specific around using a particular partner, we would complete a deviation memo, submit it to National Treasury, and obtain the approval to use it. So we are looking at ways in which to be creative within the boundaries of the law. We had some IT matters that were raised. again, dealing with legacy systems which require funding. So it's a bit of a vicious cycle we find ourselves in, where we have very limited funding, but we do need to fix some of the gaps. So we've addressed some of them. Where we were not able to buy systems, we've actually implemented manual controls, which again is quite cumbersome. But our main objective is to minimize the risk and reduce the risk. Thank you. Did I leave anything out?
Thank you, Chair. Actually, I just wanted to chip in on the issue of the transformation targets and just highlight that our indicators refer to senior researchers. I think that's key. So there are only something like 75 out of almost 300, slightly over, who are senior people. And 30, for example, are women out of 75. I'm not excusing that. If you look at the lower levels, black Africans are in the majority among researchers, and the same is true even for females in the organization. So again, it's really about making the leadership more representative. I hope that helps a little bit. If I can talk about just a couple more issues, the issue of open research, we do subscribe to that, although it requires a change of mind. The only challenge is that at times then people want to make you data collectors. Because particularly the senior researchers are academics of some standing. The challenge comes, how soon can you archive the data so that others can have access? And normally there has been a compromise of to say the first year you mine the data yourself, then after a year, even some funders insist that you should share the data, and that is happening. But they do leave a room, at least like a year, for those who have collected the data to try to mine the data themselves, and then they make the data widely available. Our data sets are accessible through our website. Right? There's a simple process how you request, and you can see what is there, and there is somebody who assists you how to actually do it. And we're trying to improve that as we go forward. So we do subscribe to the idea of sharing data. And lastly, on the impact of seminars, it is true, and hence part of the interaction that we've been having with the department of how to make the research results that we have more useful, particularly to my department. And going forward, we are hoping to work more closely with the department. At least some of the seminars will be organized together, and we will invite line departments for whom that research is relevant. And in fact, when it comes to developing policy briefs, the new idea is actually we should engage line departments rather than researchers can come up with policy implications of their work by themselves. But often that's like working in a silo or ivory tower. You know, you think that's a policy issue. But what we have been talking about with the department is how to engage with the department so that perhaps even when developing the policy briefs, we can work together to say, here are the results, so what? And then we actually try to develop policies together. So that is work in progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. So I think the one outstanding issue which we've not spoken about is this issue that you yourself raised, Honourable Chairperson, about repositioning the HSRC. So the subtext to that particular question is both the visibility and promoting a sense of what the significance of the work is that the HSRC is doing. So we have been in a conversation with our minister herself, our previous minister, about this, and we are thinking about particularly, and I'd be very interested to hear how you might respond to this, Minister, that we should be out there convening many more public dialogues. So this is what we are, as a strategy, wanting to do differently. So it's not about only about the, you know, this visibility on in the media, which is an issue, and we clearly can do better than we are doing at the moment. We can be on the radio more often. We can be television, where debates are taking place, and we will try and do that. But I think that the issue is around finding ways of taking what we have done into forums where a meaningful conversation can happen, and it is through these dialogues that I think that, you know, we could be doing that. So we started off with two dialogues. We will gradually be raising that, and I know that just in the order of business of many of our programs, that they are trying to institute this into a lot of the research that they do to make that research the subject of public discussion. We will have an opportunity shortly now to do this, as I said, with this question of mortgages and how we need to be structuring new financial instruments to make it possible for people to be able to afford the repayment processes to be able to purchase their homes. We will also shortly be in a position to share with the country some of the findings around our HIV incidence and TB surveys. And there are many other areas like this that I think give us an opportunity to be doing exactly what you have raised, Chairperson, and what Ms. Lotrich over there has also brought to our attention.
Just add that in terms of impact, our work in the area of health and education is directly linked to the appropriate line departments and is key to informing policies and programs of those departments.
Thank you very much once again for your presentation and the engagement. Also thanks to honorable members for your lively engagement. This then brings us to the end of our meeting, and thank you for taking time to ensure that we still have the majority of members and here. As Ms. Basha is noticed, it was women who kept the committee and once again, thank you very much for coming, and we'll be engaging more on other processes and so. And feel free if there's anything that you need from us or you want us, any invitations that you want us to attend to. Yeah. And honorable members, just before we finish, I just want to, I saw there's a notice that has been sent that today, because of the bus strike, and so there's only two buses, the 1645 and the 1715. After that, Dr. Masbone, there's no transport you'll see how you'll Uber or whatever. Yeah. So I just thought maybe let me bring it to your attention if you have not seen. This then brings us to the end of our meeting. There is lunch that is there. I don't know what it is, but it's called lunch. Something to whatever it is. If you could please help yourself so that you don't have fruitless expenditure. Thank you. The meeting is open.
Thank you. up there, but it's up.
What do you mean? You want to give us 30 minutes?